like
it's a good lever.
Okay, like Will Riggs is a cop, right. So he's got a different kind of code that he has to sort of follow. But by and large, you know, he still kills Uzi guy.
He kills a lot of people.
Kills Uzi guy in those movies. Pretty straightforward.
In all of them, he kills a lot of people. Yeah. You know, like he's just kind of like, and they're always in trouble because the guy's like, you cost our department $8 million, mm-hmm. and there's so many dead people, and I got paperwork piled up to here, and they're always
mayor
like,
hey, my man, ass, come on,
they were bad guys, you know.
Mayor my ass.
He's got Danny Glover to do all the feeling bad for him. He's too badass.
But Danny Glover's the one who always feels bad, and then he ends up doing it anyway in the end.
Yeah, Danny Glover just been revoked.
Yeah. Diplomatic immunity. It's just being revoked.
Dropped a crate on that guy. Yeah. That was awesome. That was Riggs, of course.
So and that was and one thing about 2 that has always bothered me, Lethal Weapon 2,
is that he's essentially dead.
No. Is the little retcon that
about how the guy could have killed.
So
his
in the
wife.
First one, it's just this dramatic thing where this guy's wife died in a car crash and he's suicidal, mm-hmm. right? That's a real life type thing. In the second one, the retcon is
that guy
from the Mighty Ducks, right hand man, killed his wife. All those years ago. Oh, yeah, I was trying to kill you, but she was in the car instead. That's a retcon to the point where it's, like, annoying almost. Every time I watch it, I'm like,
I think if you just watch 2 on its own, then it's fine. I just own 2, because I like 2. I think it's a better movie than 1. I think it's just more exciting.
No way.
You got Pesci. You got The House on the Stilts.
1 is a really good movie. Just
one,
on its own.
One's
House on the Stilts.
The classic.
The thing I had a problem with in 1 is that they set up the whole thing with Mr. Joshua, with Buse and everything, and then with the general, McAllister. Right. McAllister! And
well, they do the thing.
Dharma's dad, or Dharma's dad, father-in-law. And then the whole thing with the bad guys just kind of like peters out. It doesn't really
But they do the thing we've talked about in like Under Siege 2, which is your main bad guy becomes completely irrelevant because the physicality of the right-hand man becomes more important. And so Mr. Joshua has that ridiculously long fight with Riggs in the front yard.
Where they're all just holding them back.
And have you read about how they made that? Like, they hired the three different top instructors of weird martial arts in the world, like a capoeira guy and like a jiu-jitsu guy and some other guy to oversee it. And that whole fight, which takes like 4 minutes of film time, they took like 7 days to shoot. Every night for 7 days, they shot that whole fight scene because they wanted to make sure all the fighting styles were correct. But they don't ever do some sort of backstory to explain how Riggs knows Brazilian fighting style.
The whole thing about him, it's the titular line. He's reading the thing about how he's like a special forces and he's like master of all these. Riggs is like the Wolverine sans adamantium.
Right.
He's master of all forms of combat. Mm-hmm. And the problem I have with it is that they didn't get more into that. They didn't get more into Riggs just being a badass.
Because the reason why they didn't do that is because that would go into their characters more individually. And the whole point of the first movie, the buddy cop thing. No, it's not the buddy cop thing. The point of the first thing this was 8 years after the first Rambo, but it was all about post-Vietnam stuff.
Yeah.
And from 75 through up to like 88 or so, I guess you could say.
Well, you got a Buffalo with Seagal and stuff.
Yeah, and you got this era where you could follow up the Vietnam era with characters who came back to American society and could not get back into the normal thing.
Missing in action 2, the beginning.
Right.
Missing in action 2,
Lethal Weapon, all the good guys and the bad guys were people who had been in Nam.
Well, Murtaugh. Had Murtaugh been involved?
I think Murtaugh was in it, yeah. I don't remember them talking about it explicitly.
He was in the shit.
But Riggs, especially, came back, and the only way he could use his crazy talents with the gun was to be a good guy. Yeah. And these other guys just decided to smuggle heroin. They still use the guns. And so it was like, it was this duality thing about it, like who decided to do what.
And that was the other thing, is like the whole thing with him and McAllister, it's like they established that he knew him from Vietnam, but then like it just all happens too quick at the end. And it's like Riggs never really gets to have a standoff with McAllister in any sense. Like
The exploding car after the chase through the traffic. Murtaugh doesn't physically do it, but he's there when it happens.
Exactly. Yeah. And all Riggs gets to do is go, McAllister!
Right.
As he runs away. And I guess I felt like it didn't give me all that I wanted in the first one.
I just think that's the most complete one, because the rest of them are mostly just punchlines, I think. The second one is in between.
The second one's got more humor, and the second, but the second one still has like
those guys plus Pesci plus Chris Rock plus whoever the fuck else.
Yeah, the fourth one and the third one are making a joke,
and they're all like,
"I didn't care for the third one."
I thought they're all good.
They're good.
I like the third one. I think the third.
I even like the fourth one. I really like the fourth one too.
The third one seemed
to me Jet Li, right?
It seemed to me like the third one got really bogged down in this whole like post like L.A. riots, gang war bullshit.
The third one mostly had problems for me in the fact that. Well, that especially, but they did this thing with Murtaugh's kid.
Yeah, exactly.
Where Murtaugh ended up killing his kid's friend, who was in a gang.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I meant.
But he was using the cop killer bullets, so it was, like, justified. But and then after that, like, he never told his kid that he did it. And then there's this, like, supposedly touching scene where he, like, teaches him how to shave the correct way. Mm-hmm. And the whole time I was like, come on, just kill somebody else. Why are you doing this, you know?
Is the fourth one that starts with the dude in the full, like, metal suit.
Yeah, full metal dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. The flamethrower and whatnot.
Yeah, they're interesting. They really are. And they're all, I think they've got this, like, no matter what kind of copies came out with Tango and Cash and The Rookie and all this stuff that was the buddy cop thing, that was the originator. And it worked the best with those two actors, especially.
They
said that, like, before they filmed the first one, they had a sit-down read-through of the script with, they were considering Mel Gibson because they first wanted Bruce Willis, actually. Mm-hmm. This was before Die Hard, also. And so, and then for the Murtaugh character, they were considering, like, someone ridiculous, like Sidney Poitier or, like, someone else that would not have worked at all. And they just had those two sit down, and they said the lines that Shane Black had written weren't even meant to be comedic, really, but the way they messed with each other, and they started goofing around and laughing and joking, and, like, the 10-minute read-through they did in one scene, they were like, you know, you guys are both hired, this is perfect, this is going to be fantastic, because their interplay was really, like...
The chemistry.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine it being any different, because that's, like, that whole movie is just, like, a joke, basically.
Yeah,
even when they're, like, killing people
and
shit.
Not the first one.
Like,
well, the second
really
one
is
a lot
too, because... And I think it's mostly Danny Glover, because everything that Mel Gibson does, he instigates something, and Glover responds in this really, like, like confused
Here
way.
We go
like
again.
A normal person would be like, see you later, you know, just like get away from. But he's like, what are you doing? And then he like follows him, you know, and keeps doing it. And then Riggs responds with a joke. So like it's like instigation, joke, and it works really well because of Glover like reacting the way he does to everything Gibson does.
And he's so charming.
He is.
He's a charmer,
dude. With super long eyelashes.
Yeah, and dude.
And
his
dick.
Mullet. He's got a mullet and shit.
And his shiny ass.
He knows how to bang chicks in trailers on the beach, that's for sure.
I remember the first time I saw Lethal Weapon 2, and I was like, oh, that chick's so hot. And the more I watch it now, I'm like, oh, she's got tiny tits and your teeth.
She's really
a fan of
like,
Patsy.
She's really weird
Patsy
looking.
Kensett,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, yeah.
I was glad when she died. That's all I know.
That second one is like, it's so, like, basically, the whole movie is, like, meant to rip apart everything that happens in Riggs' life. Like, his whole life is, like, utter shit by the end of it. Because, like, he finds out this dude is the one who murdered his wife. And then he also kills his current girlfriend. And then at the end, like, he's pretty much shot to death, and he magically lives through the power of laughter. You know? Like, they sit there and tell a few jokes, and he's like,
You can't doubt tell. Say it's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll tell you.
And Shane Black was pissed, and he quit after that
because
he wanted Riggs to die. He wrote Riggs dying at the end of it. And they're like, let's not.
Sounds like Shane Black
maybe
took the
money
characters too.
Money.
Sounds like he took the characters too seriously. If he didn't write any of it to be
seriously.
Funny, and then it.
Shane Black gets a lot of credit, but he also gets a lot.
Sounds like he's figured it out now.
He gets
a lot of
flack for things because both him and Joe Esterhaus are the guys that are blamed for killing anything good for screenwriters. Because now they're like, screeners like, I wrote this great script. They're like, cool, how much do you want? And you're like, I want $1 million. They're like, it's not going to happen. You know? Back in the day, dude, Shane Black got $4 million for The Long Kiss Goodnight.
Right.
You realize that?
I like
$4
that
million dollars for The Long Kiss. Yeah, but you're going to pay a screenwriter $4 million
for that movie?
All he did better than other people was... You take a serious action movie, and then you have the people say ridiculously stupid, jokey lines to each other. That's what he did. Gina Davis, before she crashes the big rig she's driving, says, suck my dick, and she's like, Samuel Jackson walks around singing songs that remind him which pocket his gun is in so he doesn't shoot his dick off. That's, like, that's what happens in that movie. I got my notebook in my left pocket, my gun in my right.
I'd pay $4 million for that.
Yeah,
that movie's a gem.
But Joe Esterhaus also got $4 million for like Showgirls or something like that. And he also got Esterhaus is set for life because he got paid millions of dollars for scripts that were never made.
I think the real key is that.
Yeah, and Black did too. Black got paid for his scripts.
Bidding wars.
And
what's the last movie he wrote? Was it Kiss Kiss, Kiss Bang, Bang Bang?
Yeah.
He hasn't done anything since then.
And in fact, that was the first thing he had done since...
He directed that too, right?
Yes. That was the first thing he had done since Long Kiss
Goodnight. Damn, that's a long break.
Yeah. And of course, he did Last Boy Scout.
Right.
Oh, nice. Man, yeah. I saw Last Boy Scout.
We should do that on pretty soon.
Partially on TV. It was on TV, and I'm like, fuck this.
That really
is
a fantastic one.
You've got to see Taylor Negron go through the helicopter to really understand.
Except for it's got the terrible Tony Scott look to it, which really annoys me in films. It looks like Beverly Hills Cop 2, which is like smoky haze and dark filters.
Well, LA. It works for LA. I think that style works for LA.
But you know what? The Leaf Left movies are set in LA, too. And
they're blue,
I think,
right?
They don't just look blue, they look crisp and sharp. Mm-hmm. And Richard Donner has the... And John, I mean, Die Hard is in LA. Like, they've got that look where, like, they've got the big backlighting, and, like, you can tell that any night scene, they've got gigantic floodlights that are sapping half LA.
They've got fucking flows and stuff.
And then Tony Scott's thing is, like, let's shoot in the day, but let's fill the scene with smoke and terrible filters so you can't see what's going on. And let's cut every five milliseconds so you don't know what's going on.
I hate how everything now is that shaky fucking camera. Like, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, Mr. I love Battlestar Galactica over here. 90% shaky cam.
It's not 90% shaky
cam. It's almost all shaky cam. I'm not knocking it. I think it works for the show, for the most part.
You know what it looks like to me? It looks like NYPD Blue when I watch it.
It isn't as bad as NYPD
Blue was
really self-aware about it.
They didn't do it like that. It wasn't the shaky cam. NYPD Blue did this thing where, like, they set it on a tripod. And then halfway through someone talking, they would jerk the camera a little bit.
There's a lot of jerking
and zooming,
they would like it's a documentary.
They would jerk it left a little bit. They would just kind of go around in like circles, but like with jerks every 5 seconds.
That's true.
They didn't do the zooming thing so much, but I noticed Battlestar does a little bit.
Yeah. It does do the zooming thing more in the visual effects.
If there's something dramatic, they're like,
that's the same thing that Firefly
yeah,
Firefly
do, like,
did
the
same
like when
thing.
They're like flying in the raptors.
When they show shots in space,
I really like the
zoom in and zoom
well,
out.
Well, the whole thing about that is that they're trying to make it seem more realistic by having it not be so perfectly composed. It's like
they did that with, they stole that in Iron Man, too. Like that flying cam,
right? Yeah,
that Battlestar does. Mm-hmm. They did that with the first Iron Man flight. It's...
Yeah, I'm sure they stole that. From
they
Battlestar.
Did. They totally
Battlestar
stole.
Battlestar
was
the first person who ever.
It,
was
they were.
Yeah.
They were.
I'm talking about just like
the flying cam. It's
like,
awesome.
Like I think it was like Gladiator, like you know, like that kind of thing where like there's a battle, but you can't see what the fuck is happening except like
to do with Saving Private Ryan because that was actually the same cinematographer. I think Janusz Kaczynski actually shot that also. But he does the thing where they cut frames, like they do the thing where it's like they shoot at a lower frame rate and they just play it normally, so it chops things out, and then you play it with a certain filter and it looks like it's choppy, and then like in Saving Private Ryan, that opening scene where like it looks like it's cutting frames out and like dirt's kicking up and stuff and it's like all choppy because it's like you're there and you're all disoriented and stuff like that. And Ridley Scott started doing that after Saving Private Ryan, and he did it with a few movies after that, and then after that he was like, I'm just going to go direct some small stuff, and he did like Matt
they did
Stick
that
Man
a lot
and
in
like
Gladiator.
Like yeah, Kevin's, which was really
and a good year out. And things, right?
With that exactly. When all the snipers were shooting at Russell Crowe, he was like...
And he's like, Jennifer Connelly, I love
look
you.
Look out, Tugger. They're coming for you, Tugger. Oh my God, it's Russell Crowe.
Fighting around the world.
I really don't like that guy.
Russell Crowe.
I don't watch anything that he's in.
You know what's weird?
I can't stand
him. You know what's weird is that I was thinking about this the other day. No one ever talks about like Master and Commander anymore, and it made a lot of money. But nobody ever talks about
that
soundtrack.
Fucking,
when they're on the boat.
Yeah,
and
no
shit.
One's ever like,
yeah.
You know what I want to watch again? Master and Commander.
I saw that once and I was
I saw
it
in the theater.
My mom
like,
has that soundtrack. She has it on all the time when she's painting. It's like so super epic.
What's that boxing movie that he was in?
Cinderella Man.
Yeah, I didn't see that either.
Great stuff.
I don't like watching him.
Russell Crowe is not charismatic enough to.
He seems like a douchebag.
Well, he doesn't come across as someone who audiences are like, you know what, I want to rewatch this movie. And he's a good actor. It's like Guy Pearce or something like that. Like, all those Australian guys.
Basically,
Russell Crowe
Australians are hateable.
He's from New Zealand. But, like, I don't know, a lot of those actors will come across, like, Edward Norton, no one's like, oh, dude, I can't wait to watch this again, this character was so, you know, like, he's a fantastic, they're all great actors, but you're not going to be, like, re-watching their movies over and over.
You don't usually do that because of actors anyway, you do it because of sequences and, like, storylines, you know? Especially if you think it's dense.
I watch things for actors.
I mean, you might watch something for an actor,
like,
you know.
I don't, like, I wouldn't watch American History X again just because
it's,
like, rough to watch. It's a rough movie to watch. It's good though because it's got Eddie Furlong in it, and you don't get to see him in anything, which sucks because I like him.
I hate the guy.
I like watching movies with him in it.
I like how you called him Eddie Furlong, like you're his agent or something.
Oh, yeah, we're buddies.
Like people call me and Eddie, dude. People call William H. Macy Bill Macy.
Right.
Like
I did earlier today.
You know Bill Macy? my buddy Bill.
I don't like the way Edward Furlong. I don't like the way he talks. It's just like really annoying.
Edward Furlong.
You mean when he's like, no, you can't go. No.
Even in Terminator.
No.
Terminator was his most successful thing, but have you seen, like, Pet Sematary 2? And like
I've seen Pet Sematary 2. Like,
yeah, but you have.
I have. when the Kurgan shows up and he gives his wife the high hard one posthumously.
He's always giving wives the high hard one posthumously.
That's the title now. It's like you again.
You know who I'm, like, split? Like, I don't know if I like him or not is, what's his name? Viggo Mortensen.
You know
Viggo Mortensen. Like, I don't know.
Have you seen Eastern Promises?
I want to see that.
He's a good actor, but he's another one of those weirdo people.
Here's the thing.
He's like a painter, and he's like a Dennis Kucinich fan.
Like Daniel Day-Lewis. He really is like him. Like, he does crazy stuff in his personal life, and he chooses films very carefully, or he did after A Perfect Murder.
Well, he was like the sergeant in G.I. Jane and stuff.
Yeah, right. I mean, Ridley Scott. You have to say yes.
Yeah. He wore those tiny shorts.
He was good in that, though. Like,
He's always good. I mean, he's a good actor. I mean, History of Violence completely set him apart as like
one of these movies, really good. Like, I like him
almost
in
an art film thing because anything Cronenberg does, even if it's big budget, is like, you know, oh, it's Cronenberg. Like you said, the side is like, this is not a mainstream thing. Eastern Promises, I think really, I mean, he was nominated for that, you know, so like he really does come across in that as, and I don't think the part was written that well, really. It was just kind of like your standard, like, here's some kind of guy who doesn't show emotions and he turns out to be something else, you know, that sort of thing. Highly recommended, you guys.
Yeah, I wanted to see that in theaters.
You get to see his dick and his balls in it, too.
Seriously?
Yeah.
How is it?
Is he shaved?
No, he wasn't shaved. But I don't know. He looked like any other guy's dick or balls, basically.
No, it was just...
Wait, does this look... It's not like...
It wasn't... You know whose dick was the biggest I've seen in any movie that I can remember? Was Jason Segel in Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Oh, yeah.
Did you watch that?
No, he had a huge dick.
His dick was really big, flaccid.
It was.
Which doesn't always translate to big erect, but still, like, you have to...
Yeah, it actually doesn't.
I was like, what? Muscle
thing. Yeah, right, nice. It doesn't at all. Yeah, but, nice. But Viggo Mortensen was basically like watching anyone's... you know who's...
Is it as good as Harvey Keitel's?
It was bigger than his. Harvey Keitel's, Jude Law's, and Colin Farrell's are the tiniest, like, all like you see a little bit of bush, and then you see the head poking out.
you're like, hey,
there's the move. And then there's some balls hanging below it, and you're like, oh, this guy's had to be tiny. And what's funny is that, like we were just saying, like, flaccid length has nothing to do with erect length. But
they're not walking around movies with fucking boners.
It's sort of an inverse thing. I mean, really, what you're talking about is... the tissue is when it's constricted like a muscle when it's flaccid.
But they say that the amount
of... fills up with blood and
like
the tissue.
The capillaries or whatever inside can contract to the point where that they can flow more in certain dicks than other ones, and it doesn't really matter when it's flaccid, it doesn't matter because there's not as much blood flowing through it. And so when it was erect, like, they just keep filling to the point where it keeps stretching. It's not like it's cartilage or anything like that, you know?
It's not connective tissue.
Yeah, exactly.
But can I show, like, erect dicks
they don't show
in movies?
Erect dicks.
Like, they can just they can show like
NC-17,
a dick, but they can't show like a...
Sex in the City, I guess, had a bunch of dick in it, and it had like, I guess it had
the
a
movie?
More, yeah, than the movie. Well, I think a lot of women were confused because it had a lot of tits in it, like tons and tons of tits, and it had one dick in particular. And Kristen saw it with a friend of hers, and the first they walked in the door and they were like, "Yeah, we saw Sex in the City." I said, "How big was the dick?" And of course, you know, what else am I going to ask? And they were like both like, "Eh." You know, so I don't know.
That's weird that they can show like a dick, like they can't show it in like its other form.
Yeah, that's the thing. Because it becomes overtly sexual. Otherwise, you're just looking at a naked body. You know,
yeah,
because a lot of the times they show dicks in movies, it has nothing to do with sex. It's a dude.
Yeah, like
his clothes.
Killing Murphy in 28 Days Later.
Sure. Or remember in you see Lolita, the Adrian Lyne one.
I've never seen
the Frank Langella, who was
Skeletor in Masters
Skeletor and Perry White in the new Superman movie.
Yeah.
He plays Claire Quilty.
My mom was going to walk out of that movie when he didn't say the American way.
Oh, really?
She was close thinking about
really?
It. Yeah.
Because she's Republican, right?
Because she's like, no, that's the way Superman's supposed to be.
And she's Republican. So the Frank Langella, and the funniest part in the whole movie is when Jeremy Irons like comes into his house with a gun and he's like, you know, I'm going to kill you. And he's like, oh,
is
yeah.
that when he's chasing him around?
Yeah, so he goes,
I've never seen that.
They,
have, those
they have this long talk. And then after a while, he like shoots at him once, and I think he like misses or he hits him in the side or something. And so Frank Langella stands up, and his like robe flaps open, and he's got this little tiny dick bobbling around, and he screams like a woman and runs down the hall. It's the funniest thing. It's really funny. It's
well, like you remember in the book, like the way it's written is fucking hilarious. Like I've never seen
that. Nabokov is such a funny writer. Like, and that movie is really good. I've seen the old one, and like everyone's
it's,
like,
yeah, it's the Stanley
everyone's
Kubrick
like,
one
oh, the Kubrick one's fantastic. I think the new one is better. I think it's better. It really is. It's
we'll have to rent like one of those because I've never seen like either of them.
Adrian Lyne gets a lot of flack because he made some like stuff like that critics didn't love. But I mean, he made Jacob's Ladder. Have you seen that?
That's really good.
Yeah, he's a good one. Tim Robbins. It was like the big Tim
Macaulay
Robbins
Culkin.
Thing. Yeah, Macaulay Culkin when he was like super tiny.
Danny Aiello.
Yep, Aiello.
What happened to that guy?
I don't know.
Is he dead or something?
He got worn out, probably. He did 2 days in the valley. He's like, I'm done. I'm out.
Hudson Hawk.
Life was but a dream.
Yeah. I hate Hudson Hawk. So
Hudson Hawk is awesome. You don't understand?
No, I do understand. I've seen it like 12 times.
Jimmy Coburn.
It's awful.
You've seen it more than I have.
Yes,
and you
it's
hate
awful.
It.
I watch it like once a year. I walk by.
You're like, oh, it's time
I walk
for
by in the theater or in the movie store. And I'm like, oh, this looks terrible. I've seen it. I'll get it. I always do that. Movies that I really don't like, I end up watching more than once I do. I can see by your grin that you're trending.